All right, we'll go ahead and get started. Thank you guys for coming. This is the second part of a three-part series, Reaching the Missing Generation, Practical Evangelistic Ministry to 20-somethings. And today what we're going to go over is basically in two parts, one on leadership, one on community, practical like characteristics of some of the most evangelistic ministries in the United States. And just to clarify some expectations, you know, what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk some about campus ministry. If you don't have a campus ministry, if you're part of a church that doesn't have like a school next to you, but you have 20-somethings that you're trying to reach out to, this material is going to be valuable to you. And if you're here today because you're concerned about, you know, the generation gap in our churches, maybe church kids leaving and not sticking, just so you know, this material isn't really for that. What we're going to be talking about is reaching unchurched kids. And so just so you know on the front end, that's kind of where we're going.
Yet I would point out that what we're showing and what we're teaching about is exactly what creates a fire and an energy that will attract that group of people that are leaving. It attracts them back into the church.
We'll get into that.
But that's not really what we're about, what this is about.
And, you know, both Lynn and I, we attend a lot of conferences, right? Like we go around, we hear a lot of presentations on 20-something ministry and campus ministry and stuff like that. And I've noticed a trend, like this is a hot topic in our fellowship, and I've noticed a trend, just over the past few years, a lot of times when guys come in and talk about this stuff, they give a book report. Like they've read some books and they want to share some material that they've read from other guys. And we're like, man, why in the world would we do that when we have so many ministries among churches of Christ that are really doing a good job in this area?
Yep.
And so what we've done is we've done a series of studies starting in 2006 and then over the course of a few years where we actually called and surveyed most of the campus ministries and churches of Christ. And we identified the ones that were consistently reaching the most number of people. And then we went through and sat down with those guys and interviewed them. And just we identified some common characteristics that we found in all of the ministries that were really doing a real good job reaching kids. And so that's kind of what we're going to present to you today. So we'll just jump right into it. And this lesson specifically is going to be about leadership. And Lynn, have you ever run across a ministry that was really reaching 20-somethings that didn't have an identifiable leader of some kind?
No.
I haven't either. Like,
not anyone. Nothing that we researched found anyone doing that.
Yeah, I haven't either. You know, it doesn't matter if you're paid or if you're volunteer. There needs to be somebody in your congregation that's going to champion this cause. If you want to be a part of a church that's reaching 20-somethings, you need a champion. And ideally, a husband and wife team. And you know, if you can make a staff position available for them, that's ideal. I know that's not always possible, but that's what we say is the ideal. But you need those champions. And what we're going to share today are these seven common characteristics we found among these disciple-making leaders. And the first one is that disciple-making leaders, not disciple-mating, excuse me. That's, you know, that's marriage counseling, stuff like that. Anyway, disciple-making leaders embrace disciple-making as their purpose. You want to tell them a little bit about the outreach filter?
Basically, what we have seen, the effective ministries that are reaching the 20-somethings operate from what we have termed coined the phrase an outreach filter. And basically, it's a real simple idea. Just picture this piece of paper as a filter. When a college student has an idea of something they want to do, no matter what it is, whether even if they want to do a Bible study on campus, it doesn't matter what the idea is, they have to run that through the filter. When you run it through the outreach filter, here's what the question is to run it through the filter. Here's the filter. How is what you're wanting to do going to reach somebody else? Because if it's not going to reach somebody else, we're just taking care of ourselves. How's it going to reach someone else? So if they can't figure out how to make it reach someone else, we're not interested in doing it. It's that simple. And people will look at that and say, well, no, wait a minute. Doing Bible studies can reach somebody else. Well, when I got to the campus that I was called to in Tampa, Florida for 12 years, they were having Bible studies on campus twice a week with the same six people twice a week with the door shut and nobody in there. They hadn't run it through the filter. They didn't run it through and say, okay, how do we use that Bible study to get people on campus to come in and actually be a part of that study? So when I got there, they had to change their thinking. How do we do that? We still want to do Bible studies on campus, but how do we run it through the filter to get people here? Well, number one, you don't do it behind a closed door when nobody knows you're there. You got to get out into an environment and create an environment where people will see it and know you're there. You see the thinking that goes behind it? So no matter what they want to do, it has to be run through the filter of how will it reach out to other people.
Yeah, and this is, if you walk away with nothing else today and you want to reach kids, want to reach 20-somethings, or want to reach any people group, this is the most important principle. You need to make the Great Commission your purpose. That needs to be the verse that you lean into and that you see other verses through. How is this going to make disciples? And when we talk about making disciples, we're not just talking about baptisms. You know, that's the jumping off point. That's the beginning. How are you going to reach out to someone, study with them, baptize them, and then help them mature to the point where they're doing that themselves?
I've seen a lot of ministries that make the mistake. They'll either make the mistake of making their ministry about something else. They're reading the books. They're reading the research that's out there, and they're saying, we need to make our ministries about service, about going out and serving people. So they'll go out, and that's a good thing, but they'll make their ministry about that and never tell anyone why they did the service. So they're still not doing any multiplication. What we're saying is the purpose of it has to be to make disciples, lifelong disciples. If that's the purpose, then when you go out and serve those people, you'll tell them why, because you have a reason for what it is that you're doing. And we see people make the mistake. This is another mistake I see campus ministers when I interview them to find out what's going on in their campus, and they're trying to get questions from me like, what can I do? I need to change. Our ministry is shrinking. If we don't do something, it's going to die. One of the things I'll do is sit down, show me your purpose statement. Show me what it is you're trying to accomplish. And often I'll see this one, Wes. I bet you've seen it. Well, our purpose is like a three-leg table. You know, we've got a table set in here, and this leg over here is outreach. We reach out to people to save the lost. And over here is the filter is we serve. And over here the leg is, and then it's something else. It's loving one another, or there's always three different ones. And I say the problem with that one is you've given your students the choice of three. Guess what? None of them are going to pick the one that says reaching out in evangelism, because that one's not natural to them. And they're scared to death of it. So they won't choose that one. They'll choose the other two. And nobody ever does the other one. And therefore, you're never going to grow. Evangelism has to be the top of the table. Reaching out to others has to be the top of the table. The other legs are what support it and how you do it. It's a simple shift and a simple change. But unless you make that change, your students are not going to evangelize because it's not in their nature and they're scared to death of it.
Yeah, it's hard. You ready for number two?
Sure. Okay.
Number two, in disciple-making ministries, effective leaders have been practically trained to perform evangelism. How many of you guys went to Bible college? Raise your hand. Okay. Man, uneducated crowd, Len. You fit right in. I've got a degree from Harding. I'm about to finish up a master's degree from
Fuller
Seminary.
We're working real hard on him.
Yeah. Look. Before I went to Bible college, I went and apprenticed under Lynn, and I learned how to study the Bible with people. My dad's an evangelist, too. He showed me a lot of stuff before I even went down there. I was practically trained to perform evangelism before, you know, I went to Bible college. And the problem that I see, you know, it's sad when a guy with a Master's of Divinity comes up to me and says, hey, can I have a few minutes of your time? Because, you know, I'm working with these people. I need somebody to sit me down and teach me how to share somebody the gospel using the Bible. Masters of Divinity from one of our brotherhood colleges, right? Mm-hmm. That's not good. And we have a lot of churches, you know, the highest priority for them when hiring someone a lot of times is to make sure they have a Bible degree, and they think nothing about, you know, does this person actually know how to sit down and study the Bible with somebody?
They wouldn't hire Jesus.
I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. Anyway, like seriously, they don't ask these questions. And, you know, if you want to reach someone, you need to have some training, some practical training in evangelism. And what we found in our studies, now this is shocking, but what we found in our studies is of the campus ministries and churches of Christ that are reaching the least amount of people, those leading those ministries have the most theological education.
True.
And of the ministries in Churches of Christ campus ministry that are reaching the most amount of people, those leading those ministries have the least amount of theological education. You know, that's shocking to me.
You know, now, Wes, I had recently, I sat down with a group of elders that were very passionate about wanting campus ministry and wanting campus ministry to work. And they had had campus ministry for quite some time, had been investing in it for years, spent a lot of money in the ministry and a lot of money even on the minister. And they sat down with me in a real open, heartbreaking session saying, why? Why couldn't the person that was here before that we've had to let go, why couldn't he do it? I mean, we see ministries are doing it. We know it can be done. Why couldn't he do it? And I looked at him and I said, the answer was really simple. He was never trained how to do it.
Yeah, and there's some skill involved, right?
Absolutely.
It's not just head knowledge. You can't just like read a book. I mean, you develop skills through doing. And you know, the way we think you ought to learn how to go out and reach kids on campus, the best way to do it isn't to go take a class about it. It isn't even to come here and listen to us, even though we're so brilliant. It's not that. The way to do it is to identify a campus ministry that's doing really, really well. And then go and just spend some time. You come with us in St. Louis. Come hang out with Kerry Cox. Go hang out with Clint Hill in Tulsa. Go hang out with Mackie Shedd in Alabama. Go to some of these guys that are doing it really well and just spend a week or two with them. And walk with them on campus. See how they interact with the kids. See how they, when they sit down and open the Bible and study with somebody, you know, just watch how they do that and help them, get them to help you learn how to do that. That's the way to do it. Anything else on that?
No, go ahead.
We hit that one. Okay. Number three, effective leaders have a genuine love for 20-somethings.
I'm gonna share with you what happened to me in Tampa, Florida. I'm gonna try to do it as briefly as I can so he'll have a little bit of time to talk. I was in Tampa as campus minister. I had no idea what I was doing when I was sent over there. But I got over there and started reaching out to the college campus and started reaching college kids. And we got about 25 or 30 in there and had baptized maybe 15 or 20 at that point. I began to have an internal struggle. I was an old man and I was reaching out to 20-somethings. And I began to have these difficulties in my brain. And it was Satan shaking the keys at me because I got to have ADDDD. But anyway, he was saying whispering into my ear, you can't reach the 20-somethings. You're too old. You don't look at them. Take a look at them. They got tattoos all over the body. Yeah, I mean, just think about that, Lynn, because the culture you come from, and just one thing after another, we'd reach out to a young lady and she'd come into our church and our ministry wearing a low-cut shirt. And you just thing after thing after thing that younger generation was doing began to grate on me a little bit. And I remember this is when I had an encounter with Jesus. Now, for those of you with less faith, we'll call it a dream. I woke up in the middle of a dream, and it was as real as if I'm standing here talking to you today. It couldn't have been more real than this is. I was almost in a sweat, and I was sitting on a couch looking at Jesus sitting across from me in a comfortable chair, very close to me, within reach. And I was pleading with him, Father, I don't understand. Why did you call me to this? Why did you call me to minister to these college kids? Father, and it was struggling. So, Father, I don't even like them. I mean, I'm so far away from them in age that they do things, Father, that just doesn't resonate with me. I mean, Father, they're so disrespectful and they're so disrespectful to you. They'll take your name in vain. And he would stop me in mid-sentence. And he'd touch me on the knee and he'd say, son, love them. I said, oh, Father, I want to. I really want to understand you're loving one another. I get it. I've studied the Bible. I know I'm supposed to love them. I get that. But, Father, how do I love them? I mean, they're so disrespectful. The girls and the way they'll dress and the guys and the language they'll use. And, Father, how do I? And some of the guys, that Father, they smell. And he would touch. This is real. And he'd touch me on the knee again. And he would say, son, just love them. Like, but Father, how do I love them? I am so far removed from them. I just don't fit with them. Can't you put me somewhere else where I can reach out to people more, maybe my age? And because I'm passionate, Father, I want to reach people. But Father, I don't understand. How do I love them? I don't get it. And he looked at me and he said, son, love them like I loved you. I looked at him and literally in this dream or this encounter, however you want to look at it, I was in tears. I was in tears because I was a child that was abused. My father beat me at a young age and left us, abandoned us. And I was torn by that. It had created a lot of difficulties in my life, and I was still dealing with it even at that age. And I was like, "Father, how did you love me?" And all of a sudden, as if I was transformed into another place and another time and another location, I'm hearing chains, and I look down, there's chains on my hands. And I see him tied to a post, and all of a sudden I don't know what's going on, and I feel a whip hit me. And it's real. I can feel the pain. I can hear the noise. I can smell the must, and the whip's hitting me over and over, and I'm screaming. This pain, it won't go away. And then suddenly the scene changes, and I'm laying there, and they're driving a nail in my hand, and then they're driving nails in my feet, and I'm feeling every single moment of it. And then the vision stops, and I'm back with him. And he said, "Son, that's how I loved you. Now you love them the way I loved you." And it suddenly the light went on. I have got to sacrifice my life for them. I've got to carry their burdens. And my life changed that day with reaching out to the 20-somethings. We baptized over 250 in the time period I was there in 12 years. But that was the change that caused it. I begin to love them. And now I've got so many friends and so many loved ones and so many, 16 of them gone into full-time ministry. And I love them truly the way he loved me.
And I could attest to that because I was one of the kids that he loved. And my wife was one of the kids that he loved. And Carol, too. You guys modeled that for us. And I'll tell you, you know, I've been in ministry for going on 10 years now and connected to a lot of campus ministers. I've met some ministers that don't even like their kids, much less love them. And your kids aren't going to remember every Bible lesson you give. They're not going to remember every point you make in a sermon. But they're all going to remember whether you love them or not. And of the guys that are really reaching a lot of kids, man, they really love the people they're reaching out to, even when they're unlovable. And I was pretty unlovable, right?
Oh, wow.
I was pretty unlovable. And they wouldn't have reached me if they hadn't first loved me. And I was not loving them back, okay?
Nope.
So we need to keep that in mind. Number four. Did we do that one? Yeah. Number four, effective leaders persistently communicate the mission. Now, this was another really just epiphany for me in this study. A question I asked everybody was, if you had to describe the purpose of your ministry in a single sentence, what would you say it is? Of all the guys that were reaching kids consistently, they said the same thing. It was all some variation of the Great Commission. We're to be disciples who are making disciples. We're to carry out the Great Commission. We're to hit that campus running, sharing the gospel and you know, reaching people for Jesus. All the same. And then I asked them a follow-up question. I said, if I were to ask your core group members the same question, what's the purpose of your ministry, would they say the same thing you just told me? And across the board, now it was different in the ministries that weren't reaching very many people. The answer was different. But in the ministries where they were really reaching people, the answer was the same. Yes, my core group members would tell you the same thing. Why? Because I tell them all the time, this is why we're there. I coach them all the time, this is why we're there. In just about every Bible study we have, I'm reminding them of our purpose. Before we have events on campus, I'm reminding them of our purpose. Before we have that small group Bible study or that cookout or whatever we're doing, that mission trip, I'm reminding them of our purpose. Our purpose is to carry out the Great Commission. So of course they would tell you the same thing because they hear it all the time. I don't let them forget, right? How important is that?
Well, when I would research and talk to, and often I'm called by campus ministers who are in trouble and listen to them, and they're giving me, I'll start, one of the questions I ask them almost automatically is, what are you doing? What's your purpose? If I ask you what's your purpose, I need to know what you would say. What do you think your kids would say? What's your purpose for your ministry? And almost inevitably, it always comes down to, well, the reason we're here is, see, the church kids growing up in our youth groups across the country, they're coming to our university, and when they get here, they've got to be taken care of. They've got to be protected. They've got to be helped stay attached to the church. He said, so we're here to help them keep safe and grow spiritually and grow into the kind of leaders that they need to be. There's the difference. There's the difference. In these ministries we're talking about, instead, those same kids, when they come in, are sat down with. I sat down with every one of them that came into our ministry from a church, from one of the churches of Christ. And I said, I want you to understand something. You're coming into a different environment now. It's a different world. Now it's time to grow up. Now it's time to take that sword you've been sharpening all your life and pull it out and start fighting, because there's kids right out there that are dying and demons are all over them, and we're going to fight the demons off of them for their soul. See the shift in focus? We all of a sudden gave them a purpose. And all of a sudden, they like that, and they grow, and they want to be a part of that. Some of them didn't.
Yeah.
Some of them would disappear and not come back.
Leave. Yeah.
Because they don't want to fight. Mm-hmm. They want to play.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that constantly putting this purpose before them does, mm-hmm. is if you do this long enough, eventually they're going to get it. And they're going to internalize it. And once you can get them to internalize the purpose, then they're going to start sharing that with others, and it becomes contagious in your group. Once your group gets it, that just creates this dynamic, you know, where it's really a cool thing. It's really a cool thing. Number five, effective leaders lead by example in disciple making.
I want to say something about that, because I had that happen just recently. A young man calling and talking to me, wondering about what to do. And he was telling me that how he was trying to make his a discipling culture. He was even giving me a list of the lessons he was teaching. He said, I've listened to Francis Chan. I said, I'm trying to make it a multiplying culture. And it was really good words. And he said, I've been doing this now for, I forget how long he said, but it was quite a little length of time. He said, I've been really focusing on discipleship. Wes, he's focused on discipleship. He said, but I can't get any of them to actually go and do it. So I'm calling, asking for your help. How do I get them to go do it? I said, well, how many people are you in studies with and yourself right now? And how many have you baptized? He said, well, no, I'm not. You're misunderstanding. I'm not doing the studies myself. I'm trying to teach them how to do the studies. And I've got real good lessons at being evangelistic. So, you know, I'm really giving good lessons on it. I said, so you're not in studies with anybody. So how do you expect them to do what you're not doing? So let me tell you something. If you're not doing it, if you're not making disciples, they won't either. They're going to do what you do.
Yeah, and if you think about it, Jesus never asked his followers to do anything he never demonstrated for them. Every single thing Jesus asked his disciples to do, he first demonstrated. And that's because demonstration is always better than explanation. If you can demonstrate something for somebody, like when I was in San Francisco, I would go up on campus and I would take somebody with me. If I was going to have a Bible study with somebody, I would always try to have somebody with me, because I'm trying to pass on these skills of this stuff that I've learned. I want somebody else to know how to sit down and share the gospel with somebody. And the only way they're going to learn that, first of all, they need to be motivated. I need to tell them the purpose, what we're doing. Then they need to see me do it. And then thirdly, they need to develop the skills to do it. And so I'm always going to try to take them with me whenever I'm doing something like that.
You know, to take that to just a practical level for a moment, I've got a number of people here now that were in our ministry in Tampa that would attest to this. Every time we went someplace, maybe we went out to eat, all you guys that were with me, if we went out to eat, what was the common thing that always happened? We went someplace where we knew the waitress. We went someplace where we could communicate with the waitress. We went someplace where if we're throwing stuff at each other at the tables, which we would do quite often because we're having fun, we were always having fun, the waitress got in on it. We get the waitress's name. We get the waitress's story. We tip the waitress. It was a common thing for me to say to you guys at the table, what? Double tip night. Why are we doing that? Because we're trying to reach out to the waitress.
How many of them did we baptize?
I couldn't count how many we baptized. We baptized a number of them.
Yeah, there were a number of them.
Because
they became part of our ministry.
They're just like everybody else. They were college age. They needed to be reached out to. They just happened to be working a restaurant serving us. Why did that exempt them from somebody we reach out to? That's a practical application of this. I taught my kids, nobody's exempt. We reach out to everybody.
Yeah, and you know, I'm in a ministry now, the Crossings Church in Wentzville, Missouri, outside of St. Louis. We're getting ready to do a church plant next year. It's going to be a lot of fun. But it's one of the coolest discipling cultures I've ever been a part of. I mean, if you want to see a church that's really just going out and getting it as far as making disciples and really valuing maturity, one of the bread and butter, you know, that I'm learning from Robert Cox and Kerry Cox, I'm learning from those guys to create a discipling culture. you got to have people that will come along with you and just what we're talking about, just see you engaging in this stuff. And so every time we have a Bible study, it is never one-on-one. It's always, you know, the person who's leading the study, then the person who's learning, and then we even cast a vision for the guy who we're studying with, like, you know, Tim here, whoever is learning how to do this study, and one of these days, you're going to be sitting where Tim is, and Tim's going to be sitting here teaching you how to do it. And then one of these days, you're going to be sitting here, and you're going to be teaching somebody else, and y'all are going to be studying with somebody completely new. And so we cast that vision early on, and it just creates this culture. But it doesn't start without the example, right? Yeah. You got to have that. So that's really, really, really important. Number six, effective leaders have high standards and regularly evaluate their ministry. Now, this is something that Jesus did, I really do think. Like, you know, and he tells his disciples, what? You need to deny yourself and carry your cross daily. And so that's a very, very high level of commitment. And, you know, they counted in the New Testament whenever they had baptisms. A lot of people think counting is unspiritual. Then you read the book of Acts and it talks about how many people are becoming Christians and stuff. Like, oh my gosh, what an unspiritual thing. You know, as a leader serving God and being a disciple of Jesus, for these guys, it's the most important thing in their life. And people see that, like, and they set the standard, they set the pace, they're out in front, and they're showing people how to do it, right?
Yep. If you're not, Robert Cox once said in a sermon he did, I might have even been here at Tulsa Workshop a number of years ago, he said something that stuck with me ever since he said it, that I use it when I'm counseling a lot of times with campus ministers. I want to quote it accurately. He said, if you want to know the temperature of your ministry, put the thermometer in your own mouth.
Amen.
Making leaders is an extremely important aspect. Often we get accused in the discipling culture that you're just baptizing people and you're not doing anything with them. So, you know, the automatic question will always come, well, how many did you baptize last year? Well, how many of them are now still with the church? And in a real discipling culture, you're able to look at them and go, well, they're not only just in the church, but they're now ministers. They're now ministers in different locations. I've got this number of leaders. I've got this number of people who have already turned in, planted in campus ministries, or they've gone off and they're in youth ministry, or they've become ministers because they weren't just discipled and left. They weren't just gotten wet and left. They were brought in and discipled.
Yeah, and that's
and turned
just,
into leaders.
Not just full-time ministers, like paid by the church kind of stuff. He's taught. We have vocational ministers and everything.
Oh, absolutely.
Just so there's no confusion there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really, really, really important. And then the last one, effective leaders develop other leaders, and we've already kind of touched on this. Go ahead.
The goal in our ministry, because you said that, the goal in our ministry was to make every single disciple a leader. We started out with that expectation from the very beginning. They coming out of the water. Matter of fact, before they go into the water, we had the little discussion with them about, you know, what you're doing here is you're telling God, I tried my way, and it's not working. I'm ready to die and come out of this water. When I come out, I'm a new creation for you. We're telling them even then the expectation level is you're going to be a leader. Leadership is expected. You're going to be developed into a leader. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I forgive you. I'm a Christian. leaders aren't born, they're developed. Like, this isn't something that just happens spontaneously very much at all. You have to be very intentional in developing kids into leadership positions and leadership roles. And I mean, this is, Jesus made disciples out of his followers, and then he equipped them over time to make their own disciples, and to pass that tradition on. And what this could practically look like in a 20-something ministry is just passing some responsibility on, to the kids for their own ministry. It could be allowing them to lead Bible studies. It could be, you know, planning and executing ministry events. It could be leading small groups. You know, they could take on many of the administrative tasks in the ministry so you can be freed up to do other things.
I did it in a lot of even little insidious ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, just even in teaching a Bible class, I would never read the scripture myself. I would ask for a volunteer from the audience. It became just almost comical because they knew they were either going to volunteer and read the scripture or they were going to be voluntold. And I would often pick the most shy ones. Say, hey, Jeff, why don't you read this scripture for me? I'd have, hey, Jeff, why don't you say the opening prayer for us? And stuff like that, because I'd look around, I'd find out who the shy ones were, who the ones that were scared to death to talk, who the ones that wanted to be in the shadows and just hear and just learn. I've got to make them leaders. I've got to get them out of that shyness. I've got to get them to the table where they can perform and fight.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're going to have any hope of really reaching a community or really reaching a campus or really reaching, anyway, we have to develop others.
Yep.
Who are going to pass this stuff on. We have to, that's a primary role of a person that's the senior leader in a ministry. It's to develop others and to lift them up, because that's how we're going to spread this culture and spread this gospel and to actually make disciples. And, you know, somebody sent out an email to the National Campus Ministry Listserv. It's been a few years ago now, but it's a question that stuck with me. He was going to meet with his elders. It was a campus minister. And his elders wanted to sit down and say, okay, how are we going to measure success in your ministry? How are we going to gauge this? How can we evaluate you from year to year? And, you know, I didn't answer the email at the time, but I thought about it. And kind of where I landed on that is, you know, number one question to ask is, what is happening right now? You know, and that'll give you some idea. But then the second question that I think is even more important is, if I were to drop dead right now, like, what would happen here? What would happen in this ministry? If I were to die right now, and if God were to remove me, what would be left behind? And I'm just going to say, my goal, my passion, my life's dream, is I want to go through my life planting seeds, and then nurturing those that sprout. Seed to sapling, to young tree, to oak, where seeds are being spread themselves. And I just want to be able to get to the end of my life, whenever that is, and look back and see an orchard. I mean, that's all I want. That's really all I want.
We don't want to create followers of us. We want to create followers of Jesus. We want to leave a culture behind us that's powerful and strong as a driving force no matter what happens to us.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, we start with leadership today because it's going to determine the direction of everything. Discipling cultures develop around a discipling leader, and a leader is going to determine the direction of everything. And so if you're in a church and you want to reach 20-somethings, you got to start here. Who's going to champion it? Who's going to lead it? And these characteristics that we're sharing with you today, these are things where you can look at and say, okay, is this present? Is this present? Is this present? Evaluate yourself. And evaluate those you're looking out for, maybe to hire or whatever, because this is where it's at. Now, we're going to have a little bit of time for Q&A here at the end.
I had one thing I wanted to say on
okay,
that.
Okay, go ahead.
Just that part. Just one little thing. I had this happen to me with a gentleman that called and talking with me, trying to analyze what's happening in his ministry. His ministry had been very strong, a couple of hundred people, and they had really shrunk down to 100 or so, and they were having difficulties. And so he started always letting them talk and explain to me what's going on in the ministries, what do they do. And in his explanation, he was explaining to me something really frustrating. He said, just recently, you know, I let my people vote on what retreat they wanted to go to, because there's two retreats going on at the same time, and they're different, and there's a difference in focus. And so I was kind of letting them decide which one they wanted to go to, and we ended up with them voting to the point that, well, they want to go to this one this year and this one the next year. And I stopped him right there, and I said, fella, there's where your problem is. You're not leading. You're letting the sheep lead. Sheep are sheep. They don't know where they're supposed to go. And so you've got them so confused. One year they're going here and getting this message. One year they're going there and getting this message. They don't know what to do. So they're just out there running around like crazy, and they're shrinking. So you've got, if you're going to be an effective leader, you've got to make the decisions what's best for your sheep and lead them that direction.
All right. Do we have any questions? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, 2012 workshop in Searcy. July 11th through the 13th at Harding University. I'm sorry?
What?
Oh, 2013 workshop, excuse me. That is the present year. July 11th through 13th, 2013, we'll be at Harding University for the 7th or 8th Campus Ministry United workshop. That is a really, really good event for anybody who just wants to get nuts and bolts campus ministry and discipling ministry. Our focus is on evangelism and discipleship. And so every year we really try to help, you know, structure content where ministers and people helping out will leave with a toolbox full of stuff that they can go home and begin using to make disciples and do evangelism on campuses or with young adults. And so that's what that's all about. We've got a booth here, number 105 in the exchange, where we have flyers and everything else. You can also visit our website, campusministryunited.com. Can you throw up that contact slide? Okay, that's the recordings that you're looking at. All of our content from our previous workshops. It is? Okay, well, I'll look at it later. All of our content from our previous workshops are recorded and online for free. We do not charge for content from those. And you've got some really good, I mean, Patrick Mead and Mitch Wilburn and, you know, some really good speakers, are there just about every year, in addition to, campus ministers that, you know, have proven themselves in ministry and know what they're talking about.
We even recorded a few of Wes's lessons.
Yeah, and you could even, yeah. sorry about that. But yeah, you can get those all there. Yes. Here, hold on.
I didn't really want to do that. What she said is that most of us Christians go to services and the preacher throws out the seed and we eat the seed instead of taking it out and planting it.
There you go.
And we feel so satisfied because we're full of the seed. But we haven't given it out to anybody. And I thought that was really good.
There is a huge misconception in the church right now that we deal with 20-somethings. People are reading way too many books of people that have no idea what they're talking about. They're researching these 20-somethings and they're saying they are so different they don't want anything to do with the older people. Let me tell you, that's an absolute lie. They're dying to meet you. They're dying to learn from you. They want to sit at your feet and learn. They're just scared to death and come to talk to you. They want you to come and talk to them and take them to dinner and get to know them and get into their lives. They love it. And our ministries, our guys love reaching out and talking with the older generation.
Yeah, that's true. And a lot of these kids are coming from broken families.
Oh, I mean,
they're looking for that mother, father figure, that grandmother, grandfather figure. And so you guys, don't be shy about inserting yourselves into their lives. Some of the biggest blessings have come just from the mentoring relationships we've seen develop, you know, between some older Christians and some new Christians, just to show them, you know, even like the dynamics of this is how to be married and not kill one another. This is how to raise a child and not kill him or her. You know, just those little things we may take for granted if we grew up in good homes. A lot of these kids don't have.
This is how to cook a dinner without a microwave.
Yeah. You know, this is how to eat it without dribbling it down the side. Yeah. You know, just basic stuff. It's really a blessing. Anybody else?
Any other questions?
Okay, we'll go ahead and wrap up. We've got one over here.
Nick's got one over here.
Overall, how is our approach being received in churches of Christ? Pretty well for the most part. You know, sometimes people get a little nervous when you use the word discipling or disciple making, and they want to think you're, you know, some kind of other group. That other group did a lot of things right, to be honest with you. They had their emphasis in the right place in a lot of ways. We don't do one-over-one discipling. We don't have a pyramid structure, where one guy's at the top. We don't have, you know, a structure in place where, you know, one campus minister is over another campus minister, a group of campus, anything like that. Look, these are basic discipling principles. And we take this stuff from the Bible, and if people like the Bible, then they're going to like what we have to say about it, I think. Because we're just going straight from the scriptures. And the leadership principles that we're advocating, we don't take from Kip McKean. We take from Jesus Christ. And if they look similar to Kip McKean or somebody else, it's because they had the same source. You know, they went somewhere else with it that we're probably not going to go. So for the most part, I would say we're received very well.
Yeah, on occasion I'll run into situations where we're not really received within a church, but that's almost always in a church that's in trouble and it's shrinking, and they're kind of in trouble with everybody's kind of in trouble with them, if you know what I mean. They don't really approve of much of anything that's going on. Any energy that's being brought is a problem, and that's about the only time we run into it. For the most part, what we're bringing them is life. Energy.
Yeah. And I want to make one more comment to close. We're going to go right into another session. So, you know, you guys stick around. We're going to talk about community next. We'd love for you to stay and be with us again. But just one comment. I did talk a little bit about Christian education earlier, just to make doubly sure. I don't have a problem with Christian education.
No,
okay. If any of you guys work for a school or from a Christian college, I like you. I like what you have to say. I appreciate it. You know, I'll listen to what you have to say. I have been so blessed by my time at Harding and my time at Fuller Seminary. I wouldn't give that back. My point is, though, we need more than just academics if we're going to make a difference in somebody's life. We need more than head knowledge if we're going to make a difference in somebody's life. And so for any of you guys in Bible college thinking about getting into campus ministry, don't just get your Bible degree and go. Get your Bible degree and come to one of our ministries and let us teach you how to make disciples. Then go. Okay? That's all we have time for this session. I see you with your hand up. We'll get that next time. Okay? All right, let's go.
Okay.
Dismissed.
Thank you.